All right, so we have a little bit of time left for our people to have an office hours. And you know, office hours for our tightrope listeners is our weekly segment. We try to take some topic and focus in on it. Sometimes you've suggested those topics. Sometimes other people have. Sometimes Doc West and I come up with it on our own. You never know. Today we have collectively decided we should talk about this question of millennials and their discontent with democracy. And apparently some new study shows that millennials are particularly concerned about democracy, about society, where we are now, and that they are particularly lacking in the assets of previous generations at this age. So wealth, inequality of wealth and income is very significant, and that millennials make up about 25% of the U.S. population, but they only have 3% of the wealth. Baby boomers, by contrast, had closer to 25% at this same point. So they're fearful about debt. They're fearful about not being able to take care of their families and unemployment and staying on their parents' couches forever. We wanted to talk a bit about what is the nature of this discontent, but also, I guess, Cornell, I want to ask you, you know, is it democracy they're discontented with? Is it, you know, corruption that's actually the source of that? You know, how should we think about this discontent and its relationship?
No, I think you raise an important question, though, because oftentimes the discontent has to do with something that's very positive. It's the corruption that you talked about. It's the greed. It's the lies. It's the downright crimes. It's the lack of accountability. It's the impunity that they're discontented about. That's a positive discontent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't want people to be contented with lies and contented right. with corruption and so forth. Mm-hmm. But the disturbing factor is that if that discontent leads toward a full-fledged detachment and apathy, then there's no way of engaging that nightmarish reality
right.
and authorizing an alternative to it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so you end up being apathetic, and apathy, ironically, reproduces the same misery.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Reproduces the same oppression, the same domination, the same sense of helplessness, you see.
Right.
Does that make sense to you, though?
Yeah, 100%. Of course, it makes 100% sense. I mean, because it's not the discontent that's the problem. That's your point. It's like, you know, King's phrase. You know, you don't want to be. What's the quote? I know you'll remember it.
You're well adjusted.
Well adjusted to injustice, right?
That's
right. You want to be maladjusted.
Maladjusted to injustice. Mm-hmm. But see, this is part of the problem with a lot of these social sciences who like to skate on the surface and not dig deeper beneath. Because they'll say, well, the young people are discontented. Something's wrong with them, as opposed to something wrong with the system that they're discontented mm-hmm. with.
Right,
so they don't want
right.
to deal with the larger context and the way in which part of that discontent is a critique, if not an indictment, of the system in which they find themselves, the status quo that they're over against, and all of the various policies that put the burden on them, because the burden's on the most vulnerable. Who are the most vulnerable? Poor people, indigenous people, it's the women, it's black folk, it's brown mm-hmm. folk, it's young people,
right.
and the elderly, and yep. working people, you see.
Yeah. So that basically everybody but a handful of elites who keep acting like the system works for everybody.
Yeah,
it sounds
no,
like
true.
you pretty much named everybody Professor West.
No, but we've got a strong upper middle class and a strong middle elite and higher elite.
Right.
We'll walk around with big smiles on their faces and break dancing mm-hmm. to the bank.
Yep. Or just hiding out right now, hiding out in the countryside. They don't want nobody to notice they're going to the bank.
That's true.
But what's interesting too, if we think about these millennials in the context of, you know, the Obama era, right? Because they were more engaged, not significantly, but they were, there was a bump in their at least national political participation during the Obama years. And it was true that it did signal a kind of breath of fresh air and a generational change. And, you know, the narrative of hope was a very strong one. And the feeling that young people were more generally valued. Now, you know, I'm not here to make that case. I'm just saying that's what people perceived. And I'm wondering if that it's not the fall, the sort of you know, the hangover, as it were, the kind of white nationalist hangover and the economic hangover, which has gotten worse and worse, that they're also responding to, right? Which might be more specific to imagining that the system was as long as they got a Black president somehow, or a young sort of progressively sounding president, that that was going to change everything. I mean, so was it that they may have, just like the rest of us at that age, had kind of false expectations about what the democratic system in this country is really able to do?
Yeah, I think the desperation that the system produces cuts so deep that people are willing to have high expectations of persons who really appear as if they're different. And there's no doubt. I mean, Brother Barack Obama, he's a brilliant brother. He's a charismatic brother. He's an eloquent brother. So people thought, my God, we've got somebody who's not only different in style, but he might be actually very different in substance in terms of taking on Wall Street, taking on Pentagon, taking on mass incarceration, taking on new Jim Crow, taking on poverty and so forth. So that it's understandable because the options are so limited within the confines of the status quo. Mm-hmm. And within the confines of the status quo, I mean, you know, Brother Barack Obama, you know, he got a lot going on.
He was a breath of fresh air in that country.
Absolutely. That's why we supported him and so on, you know, twice.
Yeah.
But we had to tell the truth, too, because our allegiance is actually something bigger than ourselves and Barack Obama, which has to do with the plight of poor and working people.
But I also think that the crises that were sort of extended with the financial sector before Obama, right, during Bush, really the repercussions, it's like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the repercussions of a tidal wave, you know, are not really felt till quite a long bit later. And I think that's also part of the issue. It's like they're now realizing that insanity that was going on in the political system, you know, before they could vote or when they were just barely starting to vote in the early 2000s, you know, was the beginning of this crushing outcome that they're now dealing with 18 years later.
No, I think it's true. I think it's true. But, you know, I also think the older generation, my generation, has to take some significant responsibility here because too many of those in my generation told the millennials lies and put forward illusions. Mm-hmm. We told the millennials to be human at the highest level is to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you have your money, your status, you know, you go to the right school, hang out with the right crowd, live in the right neighborhood, and you will be happy, and the American dream will deliver something very, very rich and deep to you. And many of them discovered success is not the same as greatness. Success is not the same as happiness. Success is not the same as joy. Why were the older folk, who themselves sacrificed so much for us, telling us to be successful in this way? So even when we became successful, we still ended up oftentimes too empty. And when we weren't successful, they blamed it on us rather than on the system itself.
Yeah.
And so the millennials are looking around saying, well, wait a minute, people have been lying to us.
Mm-hmm.
God, Martin Luther King Jr. had a dream, and the dream is to be the highest person within
be CEO.
Exactly, be CEO of whatever it is, some major company, or to be a professor at Harvard or Brown and so forth. No. My precious parents told us, when you go to Yale, when you go to Brown, I want you to be a decent human being full of love and joy who spreads that to others. Yes. That's the life of Sister Tricia. Mom and Dad told me, little Cornell, when you go to Harvard and Princeton, don't get caught up in the success. Use the success for something greater, and he or she is greatest among you will be he or she who serves, who gives, who tries to do and speak in such a way that it uplifts other folks. What we saw with Sister Tracy.
Right.
Just a few minutes ago, you see. Yeah. And so not enough of the older folk did. Now, some did, of course. I'm not saying all. But the dominant orientation was be the smartest and the richest in the room.
Yep. That's the most connected.
Never been the message for the best of Black people.
No, but no, you know nobody. What else, Cornell? You know, to add to your fantastic analysis, because I really hadn't thought of it in terms of baby boomers, you know, betraying millennials in this way, whether consciously or not. But there's two other things that I think, and I'm weird because I'm actually like, I'm on the last year of baby boomers, so I don't count. I don't want to be counted up in there. It makes me feel too old. I'm right on the cusp on my way out. But I'll say us just for political solidarity. Okay. So one of the other things our generation also didn't do, two things. One is that we haven't been vocal enough as a generation about how much our success and our financial stability is based on a set of public institutional investments and opportunities that were built for succeed, for allowing people to survive the economic circumstances. So state schools that were well-funded and public schools that were better funded, not well-funded, but better funded.
Right.
And affirmative action programs that built the middle class for people of color.
Right.
And so on and so forth. And then all of the way unions, you know, the desecration of union work with stable wages and decent benefits, you know, all of those institutions, our generation were the beneficiaries of, we were the last beneficiaries of for the most
That's
part.
That's right.
And
That's
we don't say enough about it to say we're too busy saying we worked hard, just like the fools like to tell us all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's an important point.
You know, and so that's a terrible crime. I forgot my other point, but if it comes back to me, I will say it. But the other thing is that we think the civil rights era is the radical era, and nobody else can be as radical as the civil rights era.
Right.
So we're both doing better off benefiting from public institutions and then telling you y'all ain't radical enough, right? You can't ever be as radical as we were. This is what we marched. This is where we went. And so between that arrogance and all that wealth transfer that they're sitting on, or we're sitting on, if I'm join my actual generation, you know, it's, I think there'd be a lot of bitterness. So forget democracy. I think they're discontented with a whole lot more than just democracy.
Absolutely. But then the irony is, again, is that when you ask the young brothers and sisters of all colors, what do you prefer, capitalism or socialism? They say socialism. You know, they don't mean the Soviet Union. They're not talking about Cuba. They're talking about some democratic distribution of resources, goods, and services such that we don't have the vast economic inequality and overwhelming.
Yeah, but we've had that with capitalism just fine for most of the 20th century. They're trying to turn what is a social safety net for human beings into an evil, possibility, as if it didn't already exist.
You're absolutely right.
Boy,
but the young folk beginning to see through it. I mean, the good news
That's true.
Is that so many young folk in college, out of college, on the block, on the barrio, on the reservation, even in the suburbs. You got a lot of vanilla brothers and sisters in the suburbs.
Yeah, a lot of loss.
They're seeing through the lies and the illusions. They say, "Oh, mom and dad, we love you to death, but you were telling us too many lies and illusions. Well, we were trying to protect you. We just wanted to make sure you weren't overcome by just how bad things are." And we said, that's love takes a lot of different forms. Yes, that's true. But sooner or later, the truth is going to knock on your door.
Eggs, here it is. It's knocking right now.
It's knocking right now.
It's knocking hard. It's knocking like it did on Breonna Taylor's door in the middle of the night. A no-knock.
Lord have mercy. Lord have mercy.
That's how the truth is showing up right now.
And the police start lying, and the jury and the brother, what's his name, Cameron and company, trying to hide the lies in order for their own careers to flourish.
Oh, yeah, he's like, can we not, don't you remember the press conference he gave talking about, yes, if we have, of course, we're happy to release this information if that's what the court requires. Now he's like, yo, we ain't trying to release this information. How are we going to not release? You know, I'm like, you're singing a new tune, brother. You got a whole new instrument. So I mean, I think this, if as long as that discontent can be translated into action and imagination and a vision for another way to function, to fund our schools and our people and our drug rehab centers and our medical facilities the way we fund the Pentagon, as long as we can really help them transform that, we don't really need an entirely new system insofar as we can make significant gains by making those changes. And as long as they feel that sense of possibility, which I do think is in our hands, it is actually something we could do, then that discontent could be our best friend if we're careful.
Oh, absolutely. You got to have noble discontent for any kind of breakthrough in life. You can't get out of the rut. You can't get out of routine. And you can't get out of structures of domination without some noble discontent. But it just can't be any discontent. You see, right. It's got to have a spiritual and moral dimension to it. So it takes something you bigger. High.
It's not called, I want a free COVID test for me. It's called, we need to provide rapid free testing for everybody at all times to stop this pandemic and to bring people's families back together. Not just, I want to get mine for me.
That's exactly right. Well, Donny Hathaway say he wanted, someday we'll all, he didn't say someday I'll be free. Someday me and my partners will be free. Someday we'll all be free.
Yeah.
Part of the genius of the Black freedom.
Right, story. Right. Imagine it, and eventually it's something that you're working toward, and so it helps something you stay with it. Yeah, that's what you said last week.
Serve and sacrifice for. Yep. No, absolutely.
Well, we just want to tell the millennials to hold on and keep fighting. And, you know, I guess is in the words of Cornel West, keep yourself nobly discontented. And, and you know, and we can do something with that, you know, we can do something with that.